We're back. Forget that I was in control or pretending I was. Pretending. It's always pretending. I'm so glad to see everyone. And I want to tell you, just say that, you know, last week to me, Joe's share just blew me out of the water. I don't think I've ever heard a share on insanity in the middle of session. And I've done workshops with Joe. This is, you know, I'm still thinking about it because I was so blown away. He touched me so deeply. And I really want to honor you, Joe, and thank you, you know, because I know you worked hard on it. And I just love you. And, you know, I'm still having calls over about the weekend. He shared on mental obsession at the conference and people are still telling me, oh my God, Joe blew me out of the water. So thank you so much, Joe. And I want to say welcome, everyone. I'm glad that you're still here. I know sometimes that this is a tough go. And, you know, I tried to talk to all of you before the workshop started to make sure that you guys were really committed, because I know sometimes it's a long haul and I didn't want more than 30 people. And, you know, I'm really glad to see so many people are still here. I know a couple people are sick that have called me, and I'm just glad to see everyone. And I want to, I'm going to go over the homework assignment when I get to the bedevilment. So I want to just do a little bit of a, how did we get where we're at? You know, that we went over the physical craving from the doctor's opinion to the top of 23. You know, when I drink alcohol or do drugs, do I lose control over the amount except opiates? Is that me? Does that happen to me? Can I take a drink? Can I take some meth? Can I take some crack and not lose control over the amount? Is that me? No, I can't. There's no way, especially crack. All of it. I don't know why I want to just get one. You know, I lose control over it all, including heroin. But I have to look at that and see, is that me? Am I powerless physically? And the insanity of the physical side of the disease is I think I can control it. Based on all the evidence that I can't, I still think at times I can control, especially when I was out there. And then we said, okay, so I lose control, then just don't pick up. Right, Dylan? Just don't pick up, right? Easy. So, but the book knows, and they know I have a mind that will take me back to a drug or a drink, even when I don't want to. And the insanity of the obsession of the mind is that I think I can control the stop. I think I have the power to stay stopped on my own, that I can do it. And I don't have any evidence, and I can, in spite of all the evidence, I still think at times when I was out there in my disease that I could. And then we went into more about alcoholism, looking at the insanity that precedes a relapse into drinking or drugging. The insanity that precedes, that comes before I pick up, because we want to say, oh, the insanity is after I'm loaded on drugs, I'm smoking that crack, and I'm in the alley trying to score from the ghost town Crips again, and I'm in that alley and it's 4 o'clock in the morning, right? I'm trying to say the insanity is when I get arrested or for doing the stuff that I do, or I'm hauled off to jail, or I'm hauled off to the mental hospital because I'm having a seizure in the middle of the street. So I want to say that's the insanity. And the book says, oh, no. That's the result of drinking and using. The insanity is before I pick up, based on what happens, I pick up again. Remember the 10 craziest things? There it is, right?
Yeah.
Those aren't the craziest things. The craziest thing is I pick up again. Nothing in my system. At my very best, I pick up again. And I'm not saying, you don't hear me saying, I make a choice to pick up, because I don't have a choice. Alcohol, remember the doctor's opinion? The doctor said that I suffer alcoholic torture. Uh-huh. In order to have torture, you have to have a torturer. The torturer is alcohol and drugs. It decides when I drink. It decides when I use. It decides when I stop. It decides when I sleep. It decides when I pay my bills. If you're like me, it decides whether I have a house to live in. That is the torture. That is alcoholic torture. And I can't have it unless I have a torturer. Okay. So have we suffered that? Remember in the doctor's opinion, now it's great. So now we're at the end of more about alcoholism. At certain times, I have no mental defense against picking up a drug or drink. My defense must come from a power greater than myself, a higher power, power greater than myself, other than human. Is there anything human at this point, before we go into the second part of step one, that any of you think could stop that part of you once you're in a run, or once you're drinking, is there anything human that can stop that part of you? There's nothing for me, but if anyone here thinks there is, speak up now. Okay, it's like a courtroom, you know. Okay, you know, the court says, speak up now. So here we go. We're gonna go now into, okay, I get it, Tyla. I see the physical, I see the mental, what the heck, right? And we're seeing this insanity. And remember on page 23, it said, the main problem centers in our mind. It's not our mind, it centers in our mind. Only on 23, the main problem centers in the spirit. The problem in the mind is driven by a problem in the spirit. So now we admitted we're powerless physically, powerless mentally, everyone with me, dash, and our lives have become unmanageable. Now we're going to go into the unmanageability of our lives. And this is one of the most exciting parts to me, because this is the part that changed my life at 12 years sober when I flew Mark Houston out and did the work with him. And I'd never known this, you guys. I was so untreated and in the spiritual malady. I never knew what the bedevilments was. I never had any idea. And I was dying of it. And Mark knew it, because I was working with him on the phone for about 3 months, and he knew. And he sent me the tornado, which you guys did, or the unmanageability. And I did it, and I was blown away. And just knowing it, just knowing that what I was suffering from was incredibly comforting, even though I wasn't in a great place. But just to know that, oh yeah, that's what's wrong with me. I was so grateful. Kylie, can you mute everybody? I'm getting some background. Thank you.
You have to unmute again. Okay, cool.
Okay. So just knowing that was so helpful to me. So I'm gonna look at it a little bit from having time in the program, because this is something that time does not save you from. The spiritual malady and the unmanageability, time will not save me from. People, we're sitting in meetings, right? How many of you sitting in meetings are you here? Oh, so-and-so's got 10 years, they went out. So-and-so's got 3 years, they went out. It's not just new people. What happened? Wouldn't we like to know what happened? I never understood what happened. I thought they just didn't drink no matter what, right, Joe? What the hell? You know, I didn't understand what was driving them on the inside. So we're going to look at the unmanageability, and there's about four propositions on the first page that we need to, first I want to go to page 51. Hold on, you guys. No, I'm not going to go there yet. Sorry. I want to go to page 44. Everyone with me? We use 44, 45, and 52 to look at the unmanageability of our lives. Okay. So everyone with me on page 44. Okay. We agnostics, we who believe there's a God, a higher power, but we don't believe that power will work personal in our lives. Okay. That's what an agnostic is. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something about alcoholism. Have I learned something about alcoholism? And I say addiction too. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And you know, when we're doing it with our partner, I'm talking to them about what's the difference. I want you to know the difference. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Okay. Obsession of the mind. Okay. Is that me? When I want to, when I'm using or drinking, can I quit entirely? I can't. Or when drinking or using, you have little control over the amount, physical craving. Is that me? That's me. Over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic and addict. Now, I want you to go back in that sentence where it says you cannot quit entirely or, and write and. Instead of or, write and. You cannot quit entirely, and if when drinking, you have little control over the amount. It needs to say and. It says or. I won't get into it. It's a drunk trap, so that you can talk to someone if they think, oh, I only need one. I only need one. You have to have both to be powerless. And if you want me to explain it to you, why, I'll explain it to you real quickly. Let's say I just have the physical craving. Okay. When I drink, I lose control over the amount. but I don't have the mental obsession. I don't have a mind that will take me back to a drug or a drink, right? I just stay out of the bar. I don't have a problem. Does that make sense, Dylan? I don't go to the meth dealer. I don't have a mental obsession that's taking me back. I only have the physical craving. So I don't have to go. I can stay stopped. I don't have to go to the crack house or the bar. So let's say that I only have the mental obsession and I don't have the physical craving. When I use, when I drink, I don't lose control. But I have a mind that continues to take me back to the bar. Well, I can just have two drinks or I can have one bowl of crack. What the heck? No problem. You know, right? Dylan's cracking. I know. And you know, it's true, right? So I don't think the book is talking about having two beers in front of the TV devastates people's lives. I have to have both to be powerless. Anyway, right? Everybody get that? Okay. Dylan likes it. He's cracking up. I'm cracking up too, Dylan. It cracks me up because it wasn't me. Believe me. Okay, here we go. When drinking, you have little control over the amount. You're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, right? If that be the case, what they mean is physical craving, mental obsession, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. That's one proposition. Do I believe I'm suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer? If you're new in the program, sometimes it's tough to explain it to these people, you know, but because they know that it's going to involve God. But if they're working with me, they're real clear with about God from the very beginning, a God of their understanding, but it's God. Okay. To one who feels he's an atheist, believes he can prove the non-existence of God, or an agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, wants to quit but can't. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis of life, are not always easy alternatives to face. That's another proposition. Do I accept that? Do I accept that I need to find a spiritual basis of life, right? Do I accept that to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face, right? Only an alcoholic would say, let me go think about it, right? Alcoholic death, spiritual way, I'll go think about it. Okay, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly of that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, here's another one, proposition. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else what? Die an alcoholic death or live like the walking dead, sober, living untreated, like I need a drink. So you can come into this program and you never have to drink again the rest of your life. Never. And you know, that's a scary proposition, right? Because that means feeling like I felt when I came into this program. But you also can come into this program and you never have to want to drink again. And that's, to me, the big freedom, that I can get free to not want to drink, that it's not on my back, that I'm not living. Nothing's worse than living, even though you may not pick up, but a lot of you know, living untreated, like in that walking dead, like you need a drink and you're just like on edge all the time. You don't have to live like that. Dr. Bob said, you can get well in this program and you can get well for good and all. And he asked people, did you quit drinking for good and all? And that's what I ask people, is this for good and all? We live one day at a time. Emotionally, we live one day at a time. But I don't quit drinking one day at a time. This was a lifelong commitment to me. I'm committed to die sober. I know that you hear in the rooms, oh, don't say that stuff, but it's not that they don't know what they're talking about. Okay, here we go. So do I believe that I must find a spiritual basis of life or else? And what is or else? Isn't that a great topic that for a meeting? Or else? What is or else? Or else live like I need a drink, die an alcoholic death. Okay, hold on. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought that we were atheists and agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. You don't have to be troubled about it if you are. And mostly it was the New York contingent. Akron and Cleveland were very God involved. New York had a lot more atheists. Okay, so do I agree with those propositions? Then I go to if Then they're going to take me. They're taking me deeper inside of me. First physical, then mental, and now they're in my spirit, okay? If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. My human resources, as marshaled by my will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Okay, so what are they talking about here? They're talking about the fact that having a mere code of morals means having knowing right from wrong. Having a code of morals to save us, knowing right from wrong, or having a philosophy of life. A philosophy of life is my philosophy of what I need to be comfortable, what I need to be okay, what I need to be okay in life. That's my philosophy of life. So let's look at a code of morals. I knew right from wrong. I knew when I was out there, you don't have affairs with married men. I know you knew you didn't do prostitution. I knew you didn't steal. I knew these. I grew up in a good home, you know, and I knew this, but I didn't have the power to live up to my own moral code, even though I wanted to, even though it brought me shame, even though sometimes the things that I did, I would end up drinking and using over the next day. I knew that, but I didn't have it on my power, the ability to do that. And so it's asking me, could I do that? So then it says, philosophy of life. A philosophy of life is what I need to be okay in life. And you know, sometimes it's really good if you've been around this program to look at your life today with time in the program and ask yourself, what is your philosophy of life? So when I was out there using, my philosophy of life was what I needed to be okay in life was a lot of money, right, Kylie? Badass boyfriend. Be somebody. I was designing clothes. I was really famous in the fashion industry till prostitution and crack 20 years later took, you know, I couldn't do it anymore. So I needed to be famous. I needed to be a badass boyfriend. I needed to have a lot of money. I needed to be famous and prestigious. And I needed all that stuff. And you know what? I got all that stuff. I lived with an undercover cop for 11 years that was a badass, a very dangerous guy. And we lived in an incredible house up in the mountains above Bel Air in LA, overlooking the San Fernando Valley, if you know LA. Gorgeous house. No one could know where we lived though, because he worked undercover. So no one could even come to my damn house. So it was a crazy way of life. So I had that. And then I was at 26 years old, I was driving a Ferrari. And you know, you guys, I'm 74. At that age, no one was driving Ferraris. It was like I was a movie star anywhere I went. Hanging out in the Sunset Strip, dealing drugs to tons of famous movie people. I would design clothes during the day and deal drugs at night. And you know, it seemed to me that I had everything. I would could look at my life and think, you know what? I have everything anyone would ever want, right? My life looked so wild and good from the outside. But you know, I had those moments where one time I was coming down the San Diego freeway, the 405 in LA, and I was getting off at Sunset to go into Sunset Strip. I was dating Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys. I was driving a Ferrari and I was driving and I went, got off, and I had that moment. You know, those moments of clarity, I hope you can remember some. And I had that moment of clarity where I thought, I am dying. What is wrong with me? And you know, I could get in touch with this feeling inside of me, this spiritual malady, right? This spiritual disorder that I have, this unmanageability of the spirit deep inside of me. This was with me when I was 12 years old. I remember feeling it at 12 years old. This will be with me many times in sobriety, right? But this is right before, you know, the times when I was out there using. And you know what the thought comes to me when that happens? Oh, not a problem. I just need a new car. I just need a more higher paying job. I just need to have a couple boyfriends on the side. Everything that I thought I needed in life to make myself okay never went far enough and never lasted long enough, because my obsession was to continually try to manage my external world to fix an internal condition. So I always had to keep upping it. And it only lasted a short time. And then I'd have to up it again. I hope you guys can relate to this. So I had to see, I want to read you what they're talking about here. Okay. In fact, I could will these things with all my might, my willpower, but the needed power wasn't there. My human resources, as marshaled by my mind, my human resources, this is top of 45, my human resources are everything I bring to the table, minus God, my education, my money, my brain, the 12 steps. 12 steps without God. How's it working, right? Because isn't AA a better philosophy of life? But will it work without power? Can I work it on my power? So it's showing me on my power, on my mind, I can't do it, okay? So I'm going to go down to the next paragraph. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Now, a dilemma means I don't like either choice. I don't like alcoholic death, and I don't like spiritual way of life. But I never had a dilemma. I always was willing to go for God. I was always willing to seek power. I didn't have that problem, but a lot of people do. But I hope by the time, I hope when you're working with people that you're already getting them in touch with God early on, and prayer and meditation and a higher power of their understanding before this, so they're willing to make this decision, because standing in this dilemma is not a healthy place. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. Oh, okay, now just like the foreword to the first edition, they said this is the A way of living. Now we had to find a power by which we could live, not a power by which we could quit drinking, because the way that we live is what will get us back to a drink. I start living a dishonest, sneaky, hurting people, selfish, self-centered life, and I am going to go back to drinking. That's what I believe, or live like I need a drink. It will only be a short time, because remember, the bottom line of step one is not that I can't drink. You guys all know we can't drink. The bottom line of step one is I will drink. I will drink if something doesn't come between me and a drink. And I think, I will drink, and I don't want to live like I need a drink, because I've lived like that in a very untreated state at 12 years when I first met Mark. And in the last 18 years, you guys, since I've done BBA, I've had hard times. Don't misunderstand me, but I've never, ever been in the place I was 18 years ago when I wanted to kill myself at 12 years sober. Never. And it's because of the program that I worked that I never knew existed. I never knew so much about the big book. I never knew so much about prayer and meditation. And I got to experience a whole new way through the big book awakening, and working with great people. Okay, so here we go. I had to find a power by which I could live. You know, when they put a little P, it means our power. When they put a capital P, it means a higher power. A power by which I could live. And it had to be a power in italics. That's like a neon sign. Beep, beep, beep. When you tell those people you're working with, when they see that, it's like a neon sign. I had to find a power greater than myself, capital P. Obviously, but where, hold on. It says, but where? Obviously, but where and how am I to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Oh, the book isn't about quitting drinking? Well, kind of, but it's about finding power. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. Circle solve. I want you all to circle solve. Okay. Will solve my problem. Now, this is what I did. This is what I did before I did BBA, you guys, and I didn't know I was doing it. This is for the first 12 years. I had a relationship with a higher power. It was distant. It wasn't a personal God. It was a distant God. But I had a relationship with a higher power, and that higher power was on call. I found a power that would solve. I just want to read it to you the right way. I found a power that would enable me to solve all my problems. So what I did is, instead of that power solving my problems, I would go to God and I would say, God, I've been on 3 job interviews and I want this job. I never asked God what job God wanted me to have. No. Tyler was playing God Junior. I would say, let's say I was looking to date, I'd go on some dates with guys. I wouldn't say to God, what guy do you think is the best for me? I would tell him I want that one. Right, Kylie? I mean, isn't that what we do? I mean, that's what we do. So I was God Junior, and you guys, I never saw it. God had my alcoholism, my addiction, but every other part of my life, God, I want you to help me with my finances in this way. Not God, what do you want me to do? What could I do? Show me what I could do to make my financial situation better. No, no. I would go to God telling him what he needed to do. And you know, God, guys, it didn't work. And I didn't know I did it. When I saw that I did it, when I was doing BBA, I was blown away because I was doing it in so many areas of my life. And I didn't really see that God wasn't really being God in all those areas. So I'm going to go down and read this. That means we have written a book which we believe, so it says, I'm going to find a power that will solve my problem, which my problem is lack of power. And then it says, we've written a book that is spiritual. Oh, so I must have a spiritual problem. Oh yeah, you do, Tyler. And moral. Oh yeah, you got a moral problem too. And it means we're going to talk about God. Oh, you got a God problem too. Okay, I get it. You guys get it? The book's telling us it is or it isn't. Okay, here we go. Flip over to page 52. Let me just get there. Oh, I want you to flip over to 51. I'm sorry, you guys. I want to go to 51 first, okay? This page, 51, is a prerequisite to the bedevilments when you're taking people through, because here the book is going to take me out from behind my biggest excuse for what happens in my life. And that's what happens when I'm drinking, right? So the bottom of the page says, once confused, top of page 51, once confused and baffled by the seemingly futility, right? Uselessness. Futility means uselessness of existence. They show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question. Now they've taken me out from behind the bottle. My biggest excuse of why I have problems in my life is because I drink. Oh, no, no, no. They say, no, no, no. We're going to look at why your life is so unsatisfactory, irregardless of the bottle. Okay. That's all I want to look at. Now I want to go over to 52. Let's go to 52, the middle of the page. I want to read it. Middle of the page, this is a bedevilment. Bedevilment means things that haunt my life. You know what I mean, Lisa? These things haunt me. They're like on top of me. You know what I mean? And I don't think you could give me a better word than haunt my life, right? I mean, when I was out there using and drinking, I was haunted by what a wasted life I was living and how useless I felt day in and day out. It was horrible. And I was been there in sobriety, but not like I was when I was out there. Okay, here we go. I had to ask myself why I shouldn't apply to my human problems the same readiness to change my point of view. Was I having trouble in personal relationships? I couldn't control my emotional natures. What was I prey to misery and depression? I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether I would see newsreels of lunar flight? That means the future. Of course it was. Okay. So now I want to talk to you about this. Okay. It says in the first question, the first sentence, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. What are they saying? They're saying in the physical craving, we didn't look at the physical craving to define it as what happens when I drink. We looked at the physical craving as what's inside of me. There's an abnormal reaction to alcohol. I have an allergy, a sensitivity, unlike other people. The problem with the physical craving is inside of me, even though crazy things happen when I drink. Then we went to the obsession of the mind. The obsession of the mind is in the mind. Remember, the main problem centers in my mind. It's not what happens when I drink. It's in the mind. And now they're saying to me, we should be willing to change our point of view with our human problems, that maybe the problems are not external, but internal. Oh, now they're getting deep. Now they're telling me to look inside. You know, oh, Veronica's here. Awesome. Hi, Veronica. Now they're telling me that, you know, the old timers that would say, you know, Annette, when they would say, the problem's inside and the solution's inside and it's an inside job. Those guys knew what they were saying because it is an inside job. And that we have to see the depth of the problem. See, if I don't understand the depth of the first step, that's why we're in it so long. And I know it's a long haul, but you guys, it's so important because if I don't understand it and experience it, I'm not going to do the practice. Why am I going to make amends? Why am I going to practice 10 and 11? I won't do it. So now it's asking me, let's take an inventory of this spiritual condition. I'm going to talk to you about what this is, a spiritual malady, untreated alcoholism, dry junk syndrome, bedevilments. I don't have a disordered spirit, but my spirit is in disorder deep within me. It's in disorder because it is in disorder with God, with my higher power. The spiritual disorder inside of me is transparent. Like, what does God look like? You can't see it. But the bedevilments give me a reflection of my internal condition when in fit spiritual condition or when in unfit spiritual condition. It gives me a temperature gauge of my spiritual internal condition. You get that, Veronica? It's very, very powerful, you guys. This was mind-blowing to me. This took me, today when I do it, I get so excited because to me, it's so life-changing for me. And it's still today because, you know, I didn't do it once. I do it every time through the steps because it's going to show me what's going on inside. So I can't see the spiritual malady, the spiritual disorder, but it's reflected to me back in those bedevilments. Full of fear, trouble in personal relationships. It's giving me a reflection of my internal condition that I can't see when fit and when unfit. Okay. I am in disorder with God. I am out of order. I am standing in God's place rather than next to God. Okay. And the fact that I'm the one trying to manage this internal condition continues to make it worse. With my ideas. And you guys know when we're feeling this stuff that I'm going to go over inside, you know, we're buying a new outfit. You know, we're on our way to the ice cream store. You know, the casino's looking good. We know, you know, you right? You know, that hot guy that we really didn't like, oh, he's looking good now, right? We know that. We start to try to fix it with external stuff. And it is a dead end street. And when we understand this, we can stay so much more spiritually fit than we ever thought, because prayer and meditation will become like breathing, because that all of these steps working together is what keeps me spiritually fit. And don't think I'm always in spirit. I hit a lot of difficulties in sobriety, but it never lasts so long and it never takes me like it did. It doesn't take me because I know there's a solution. So understanding step one, when that spiritual malady is out of whack enough, when all those bedevilments are out of whack enough, it can set up a condition for insanity to return. And when insanity returns, I am in danger of the mental obsession returning. So you better understand, and I better understand what's going to take me back to that drink or that drug. Because if I want to stay in fit spiritual condition, I need to do all the practices. I need to be making amends when I hurt someone during the day in step 10. I need to be doing a nightly review in step 11. I need to be finishing my ninth step amends. I need to be living this program, not just doing it once in a while. And I mean, mainly, I need to be working with others. So I'm going to go over the bedevilments. And I did the exercise. So let's look at, where's my exercise here? Let's look at having trouble with personal relationships. And this was the assignment you guys had to put down your 10 most important relationships. And then in a meditative way, ask intuitively, God, please show me the trouble with my brother, and to write it down. It may be a word, it may be a sentence, it may be a paragraph. I have no idea. It may be difficult for you to think you're hearing, but you will be hearing. And this is a beginning of being able to intuitively listen to God. And you may get nothing, but most of the time you will. So in the 10 most important relationships that I wrote down, my first one was God. And I wonder if all of you had God on your list. Because a lot of you did, Veronica, a lot, most of the times we don't. And I wouldn't have probably had it either, but I knew to put it down. You know what I mean? So, but if you don't, I hope you put it down. So in meditation, I doubt at times. That's what I got intuitively. I doubt at times. And I doubt God in areas at times. And then one of my best friends who drinks, I won't give her name. She drinks and I want more time with her. I don't care that she drinks, but she drinks more than I wish she drank. My brother, Craig, I got too far. And my attorney, I got the word honesty. So I got other things, right? And another friend, I got the word not that available. So you may get a word or you may get a few words, but do it and then read it to your step partner before you do the next exercise. So my trouble in personal relationships, I have found through the years, my trouble in personal relationships is that I want too much from them. I want from personal relationships what only God can give me. And that distorts them. When I am filled with God, I can go to my personal relationships to give rather than get. And until that happens, I am in usually causing dysfunctional relationships. I need them instead of I really want to be with them. And I've experienced and I've done lots of work and other stuff on it, but it's absolutely true. And when you get deeply ingrained, and Donna knows, and you guys know, with God, you're not going to go to them so needy. And I was so needy in early sobriety. Okay. I can't control my emotional natures. Okay. Emotions are external. You may see my anger and I may control my anger, but anytime the big book uses the word nature, it means inside of you. Cause it's going to talk again about emotional natures when we get into a fifth step, and the nature of my defects and my defects of character. My emotional nature is inside. I may be able to control my anger, right? And I may be able to control my jealousy or my shortness with someone, but inside I'm dying. Inside I'm raging. You know, we know, Veronica. I know you know, and I know Annette knows and Donna knows and everyone on this knows. And this is one of the hardest things, because you know what? What happens is my internal life becomes important at this point in the big book more than ever. Because you know what? I can say, you know, I'm not gossiping about someone and I'm not judging someone and I'm not doing this to someone. I'm not doing it outwardly. But what am I doing inside of me? See, I don't want it inside of me either. And I have to work on it, on things like that I don't want, that I'm thinking bad thoughts about someone or judging them. I don't know if I'll ever be free of it, but I'd like it to be more free of it. And I do certain things, to biblical things out of the Bible, to get free of it. You know what I mean? To work on it, because I want to have peace inside. And that's what it's telling me. I can have peace inside as I really begin to see, because see, my internal condition with these bedevilments is a result of me managing it, not God. And this will be sometimes a continue back and forth. It's not a straight line. I will sometimes go back and forth, but more and more I will know how to stay in the position of God managing my internal world. Okay, so misery. I wrote notes on this because I inventoried, and I hope all you do. Emotional nature. It says, I can't control my emotional nature. The problem I got is I won't feel if I try to control it. My problem is I don't want to feel anything that doesn't feel good. So I try to control my internal condition. I don't want to feel sad. I don't want to feel depressed. And what happens is I limit what I'm willing to feel, and I try to control it, and it shuts me down. And if I don't feel some of the negative stuff, I'm not also going to feel the joy. And what happens is I shut down. And I can see that if it feels good, it's good. If it feels bad, it's bad. And that's nonsense, because now I know the depth to which God will be with me in those feelings. Misery. I separated misery and depression. Misery. For me, I wrote getting old. I'm 74, getting old. Sometimes that's really hard for me. I live alone and housework, and sometimes I can't do it. You know, I don't have anyone to help me with certain things. So that brings some misery on me. And being able to work the computer sometimes brings misery on me, because I'm not very good on it. I wish I was better on it. Depression. I don't accept depression sometimes as part of my life. I don't say you know what? I'm not going to be always happy, happy Howie. I can be depressed sometimes, and it's okay. I ask God to be with me in the depression, and it doesn't last very long. But when I try to resist it, it seems like it takes me more. Can I create a life that I'm happy or sober about? I think that the difficulty with my life right now is sometimes I'm too serious. I don't have enough fun. I think alcoholics and addicts, at least ones I know, they don't know how to fun. You guys went in early sobriety and they told me to have fun. I had no idea what fun was. Smoking crack. I had no idea what fun was. You know what I mean? I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's really still hard for me, and I have long-term sobriety. Feeling of uselessness. They're just feelings. Doesn't mean they're true. Doesn't mean they're true. Full of fear. The more hectic my life is, these are things I wrote with my life today, not my life before I got sober. The more hectic my life is, the more I'm full of fear. Unhappy. I'm not painting. I'm an artist. I've been painting for 25 years and I haven't painted since COVID. And so I'm not very happy right now because I'm about not painting. I had to close my art classes down at my house. And so they're starting back up in May. So that's been an unhappy area. Real help to other people. I have to say, can I be of real help to other people? And early doing the bedevilments, one of my meditations was, God, what does real help mean? Because you could have said, I can't be of help to other people. Why did you say real help? And God said to me in meditation, Tyla, being of real help to other people is to bring them to me. To be of just help to people is to make them dependent on you. I swear to you guys, isn't that amazing? And that is so true. So if I'm going to be a real help, I'm going to build their dependence on their higher power. Okay. Okay. That's the bedevilment. So I look at those bedevilments and I say to myself, if every single one of those bedevilments were perfect, if I was happy and my life was great and this was this, they were all the way I wanted them, could I still drink? Do you guys ever drink when all of those were great? I did, right? So I'm seeing at a deeper level my powerlessness for this internal condition, because we want to remember I only drank when things were good. Oh no, I drank when they're good. I drank when they're bad. Any other reason that I say I drank than other than I'm an alcoholic is a lie, or a drug addict for what I used, okay? So I begin to see that these bedevilments give me that indication, that barometer, of my internal condition, and it's something I can use. And we're going to look at it. This is a first step perspective. We can look at it. We're going to look at it from a second step, a third step, and an 11th step. So I think that's all I have. I think that Joe might want to share for a few minutes. And I'm so grateful to be here. I want all of you to share. And thank you for letting me share with you. Love you guys. Thank you so much. Joe, you want to share any? Get anything I missed, Joe?
No, you didn't miss anything, but I'd rather hear other people share tonight.
Okay, well, we'll get you later. I love you, Veronica. Love you guys. Felicia's here. Ryan's here. Awesome, you guys. Who would like to share? Norm, you want to share, honey?
Sure, why not? My name's Norm. I'm an alcoholic. See me? Yeah. Tyla, amazing. You know, man, you just have this, you know, God's definitely gifted you with the ability to discern this big book in a way that brings it to us and helps us to understand how we can become more God reliant, but it actually comes alive. And it's been coming alive to me in an amazing way, four times through it, second time with BBA this way. So it's definitely coming alive and stuff like that. And so, you know, for me, these bedevilments, I've been kind of like in some of them, I've been really living it like for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And it had me struggling in a lot of different ways in my, you know, personal relationships. And, you know, this emotional thing, I can align with that because there would be times where I would be like so frustrated mm-hmm. about things that I would just like get emotional or I'd have outbursts or something. And, you know, about certain situations, or, you know, I might even be like, going to the McDonald's and they got me ordered around and I'm flipping out, you know, I'm like, whoa. And I had to really sit back and look at like, well, what's driving this stuff, man? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What is it that like, that's not me. Why am I doing that? You know what I mean? And so I began to look at these little things in my life of like, what is really happening, man? Because I sure as heck don't want to do that or be mindful of that, you know, and my whole inner self, my whole gut and my whole voice that I know that I listen to, that the God, you know, he guides me through there, is just firing off in all these ways. Mm-hmm. And you know what, man, I'll be honest with you. Like, I was like, nah, I'm going to do it my way. No, I'm going to do it like this. And then I would struggle and have just like this back and forth. And I think, I would say like last year somewhere around the holidays, I kind of like broke down in a way that was like, dude, I can't do this anymore.
I remember.
Like, it's just like, and it was killing me, man. And so I reached out to some, I shared some deep stuff, you know what I mean? And like, you know, I still battle with things today, but you know, those places that we go is like, it just like, what the heck, man? Why do I want to do that to myself? Like 9 years sober or 10 years sober, what's that about? And it was like, you know what? What I've learned is that if I can just, I'll put it to you like this for me, if I can have more Jesus and less of Norm, it would be all right. But I got to find that place. I got to really, honestly, sincerely look at where it is that I'm getting blocked, man. And I got to own it, dude, like with everything I got. So I wrote this big letter and I wrote some other stuff. I learned that I can be love and tolerant and I can be friendly and I can be understanding and I can be giving. Like Tyler said, she hit that so on the money. It was like, oh, you know, it's like not focus on you. Yeah, but just be giving like unconditionally. Like God gives us unconditional love, right? No matter what we do or how bad I was, or how bad I was diving in that dumpster, or how bad I was out there using and robbing and stealing and going to prison, he was still there for me, man. It was like, whoa, dude, I don't deserve that, right? That unmerited favor. Like, and all he says in this book, you know, this book tells us, just wants to hang out with me more, man. But my self, righteous self will block that, man. And in everything, like relationships and food and, you know, and, you know, and sweets, you know, I mean, they're all on my butt about sweets and then I'll be like, whatever. And then like go to my doctor, you need to chill. Okay. And so, you know, anyway, it's been very powerful and I'm going to just continue on and working at this. So thanks, Tyler, man. You rock. And I just thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to share it with you. Who would like to share? You want to unmute and share?
Hi, I'm Felicia, alcoholic, codependent. Thank you for an incredible share or teach on that, Tyla.
Thank you, baby.
You know, this page 45 is all of a sudden my new favorite page. You know, it just made it come alive in a whole new way tonight. You know, I like when it started out just, well, I really circled human resources and I think I paid a special attention. I ended up writing in the margins, no human resources, and like a line through it. I'm from that field of human resources. And it made me think just as no human resources, all the things in the external world that we try to draw from within ourselves, our own willpower, competency, mind knowledge, you know, and around us. And but maybe you, maybe this, maybe that. And it's just, No, none. And I love really what you said a few weeks ago. This has stayed with me and this has been like my own personal running joke almost. It's been like, no, I end up writing sober after all kinds of stuff now.
Me
right?
Too.
So no human resource, no matter would help me then. It was not sufficient. It felt utterly then and it felt utterly sober, like even now today, it just feels utterly sober. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Mm-hmm. Then and sober. If I forget that today, yep, now I'll be like, no wonder I am frustrated, worked up, struggling, what have you, because I have slipped off into, wait, I gotta get my book. You mentioned some things that sneaky this or that or the other, and I don't know how it shows up for some other people, but it just shows up in some little silly behaviors. Some little silly behaviors that is like, okay, I am slipping back into trying to have some control over something that I just don't, and trying to have power. And I love that I'm working this program again, and going through these steps again and having the opportunity to do it with you all here, it feels just like a fresh anointing, a fresh reopening on this. Because right now, it's like falling like down like something fresh on some old situations and bringing new revelation to it. And even fresh for what I need right now in the present, that is new and different situations that mm-hmm. is like same thing, just different, it looks different, but it's the same thing. Lack of power is our dilemma. Don't even go there. Don't even struggle with it. Don't even get caught up. Don't even get pulled in. And I'm having to let some things fall off. I'm having to let some people go. I'm having to let step away, because what looks like one thing can be another. And I cannot get even caught in the struggle of trying to have power, trying to change something that I just simply can't. And that means my dependence on God has had to go up, up, up. Because I love that this says, this is what this book is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all.
Thank Beautiful, you. Honey. Thank you so much. Who would like to share, like to unmute and share? Donna? Yes. Donna, go on, honey.
Hi, everyone. I'm.
We can't hear you, baby. Can you turn up your volume?
All right, can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
I'm having a really deep experience that I am not like normal people. You know, it never gets greater than step one for me. I need to really see my limitations. You know, I'm a life coach, and normal people have these tools, and I'm part of this workshop with some other coaches, and it's called Positive Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And the one piece that I cannot leave out is God. Like, for them, they may want to do this whole positive thinking, but see, I can't get caught up in that trip and think that, okay, this is just about me using a tool, because I do have to pause. I can't go down that rabbit hole with fear, but my next step is turn to God. Theirs is a recreation of their thinking, and my thinking doesn't take me to sanity. My thinking takes me to insanity, and that's one thing. And I always have a difficult time when I share.
You're doing great.
Moral and philosophical convictions galore. I remember, because I've been in New York all my life. I remember sitting and watching skyscrapers crack the fuck out, talking about where I wish I could live. And I'm going to A-list parties, and then I wind up at crack dens in Harlem, hanging out with people that never had a phone or a TV in their life. And that was the best I can do with my human resources. And my human resources was my best efforts, my goals, my education, my upbringing.
My friends.
Well, at that point, my friends had all left. But the most recent thing is, I'm not like normal people. I just see that, because my mind won't tell me the truth about alcohol and drugs. It just never brings up consequences. But the crazy thing, and I may have shared this last week, but it won't stop with consequences about everything else. If I need to go, I want to build my coaching career, my thinking tells me, oh, you're not going to get clients. So why does my mind talk so much to keep me from being the best human being I can be? But when it came to alcohol and drugs, there was no truth. It just said, where's the consequences then? So I will not rely on my thinking. It is whacked. It wants me dead. And thank you, Tyler. And thank you for everything.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I'm going through this for the umpteenth time, because I'm seeing a deeper level of truth.
I'm so glad, honey.
God is, and how small I am. Thank you.
I'm so glad. Great, Donna. Annette, would you like to share?
Hi, my name's Annette. I'm an alcoholic. These last 2 weeks have been really rough for me. Last week, Targa, when you said to list 10 people, you know, I have some struggles, and I did my list and I left off my three brothers that hate me. I mean, they have absolutely no problem telling me they hate me and really wish I were dead. So I didn't put them on my list because I just want to forget about them. And then you said, you know, when you were doing your example today, you said, oh yeah, and I wrote my brother, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't write them intentionally. And I agree with Donna. It's like, this is just bringing me to a whole new level of stuff that I really have to look at. And I loved so much about what you shared, because I spent my whole life trying to fix things with external mm-hmm. stuff.
Me too.
If I got the right job, the right boyfriend, the right husband, the right car, people would like me. And if people liked me, I'd like me. And if the outside looked good, and then and I had it out there. And then even in the rooms, you know, I came into BBA at 12 years too, because I was so miserable. I was suicidal. I hated myself. And then another thing I took a whole bunch of notes tonight. Another thing was I've been really thinking about my emotional nature. And sometimes I believe my emotional nature is angry. Like the thoughts that go through my head, I beg God to please, you know, change this, because I don't want to constantly have negative, angry thoughts. And I want to be happy for people. And I get into those seasons, those dry seasons with God, and I ask God constantly, you know, I'm here, I know you're here, why don't I feel close? So much you said tonight, like, just totally has really hit me. And then the bedevilments, you know, I really liked what you said, feelings of uselessness, they're just feelings, they're not real. And I need to remember that. It's like, you know, when I'm working with somebody and I feel I'm useless, it's like, no, that's just my insecurity. And that's my not thinking I'm good enough. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
It was amazing.
Oh, you're so welcome. I just want to say something quickly, and I want Ryan to share. You know, some people's ego, what I call spiritual malady, ego, whatever you want to call it, is an ego in reverse. It's not an ego that says you're so great. It's an ego that says you're not great. And I learned this from Bob O. If you guys know who Bob O is, he was sponsored by Don Pritz out of Denver. He's terrific. And because I didn't have an ego that told me that, I had an ego that was like Annette and Donna are saying, that would say, you can't do that. Don't try that. And that's why I'm telling you guys, when you see some self-defeating beliefs that come up strong, I want you to make a note of them, because we have a whole self-defeating belief inventory for step four, and you're going to get freedom on this like you never had. So I just wanted to share that, because I saw that in my own life. Ryan, would you like to share any?
Yeah, thank you, Tyler. Ryan, alcoholic. Thank both of you, Joe, Tyler, for just putting this on. You know, I didn't think I was really going to get much out of it. I'm starting to.
Good.
I'm getting an experience, I guess. You know, I'm realizing that I never thought that I was powerless in the way that I need to believe that I'm powerless, and that I need power. Right. I need power. I don't have it. So I need to go and seek it, and I need to tap into the power. Right. I didn't really fully believe that before. I thought that I could, but maybe I just need a little bit, you know, here and there, you know, but no, I need it. I need that power all the time, every part of my life, mm-hmm. every step of my life, because I found myself in the bedevilments a lot, you know, a lot, because I just, just because of some of the things that I never fully turned over. Things would go good, and I program would fall off the wayside, and relationship with God, and, you know, just wasn't really working to improve that. So, and another realization, I know it might not be on this topic, but I got it from my last, for the week before that, I cannot not drink like normal people, meaning, and here I was in delusion thinking that I could not drink like normal people and not do the fucking steps and not
That's right.
step 12, not meditate, right? I can pray, but I don't need to meditate. So I was thinking that I can not drink like a normal person and not do the steps, right? I need the steps. I need a way of living, and I need the power in order to keep that, to guide me through this whole thing. So
that's great.
Thank you for letting me share. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. Who would like to share? Wants to unmute and share? Rick, see you. I see you, honey. Got to see your hand.
There we go. Sorry. I can really relate to Norm, because that's where the last year and a half of my life was. So, and my step one experience has been just like the first time in your living room, only I lost it at year five. And now, I mean, I'm having these realizations of my powerlessness and where I've taken control in almost every area of my life, you know, from God to Rick. And in this step right now is preparing me for step four. And I'm like clearing out everything. It's like a major house cleaning for my thoughts. And both on the weekend and tonight, you talked about, I was able to make the list that came like that. It wasn't even a lot of thought. I can't tell you that I put God first. It's just the way it started coming out of my head. And at first I thought I was making my next resentment list. I really didn't care, because I want clarity. I want freedom that only this can bring me. But what I'm having a little problem with tonight, and I feel a little daft, is when I sit there in meditation to have that step one experience with each of those people on my list, can you help me with that? Can you go over that one more time?
Well, what you're going to do is you're going to have the list in front of you, which is what I did. I made the 10 people. You may have 11. You know, I asked God, please reveal to me who needs to be on this list.
Right.
Right. And if you have 7, it's fine. But 10 was just a number that seemed right to me, but doesn't have to be exactly. And then after I make the list, and God was on the top of mine, and I just in quiet time, just sitting on my floor with my list, I just said, God, please show me the trouble with my relationship with you. And I just listened. It goes fast. I just listen for a few minutes. I go through the list and I listen for a few minutes. If nothing comes, I continue through the list, and then I go back to the ones that I didn't get anything. Does that make sense?
Now it did. Sorry.
You may get one word. You may get one word, sweetheart. You may get a sentence. Just don't question it. It's listening.
Don't overthink it. Just write it.
At all. Just listen.
Thank you.
We always think, is it coming from my mind? Is it coming from God?
Yeah. Right, Joe? Am I crazy, or is it really God? You know?
I
know I've heard God like you. So thank you. I don't want to take up too much time.
Who would like to share? Who wants to unmute and share?
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hello. That was great, Tyler. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome, honey.
I just related so much to everything people have been sharing, but it was funny because when I went through the questions, it was like over the weekend I was feeling good, and I was like, oh no, you know, I'm good, I don't have these things in my life anymore, oh this is great, look at all this progress, Vanessa, you know. And then today I had to call like both my sponsors, Al-Anon and AA, you know, it was like some fellows, like, you know, it was like everything came up. But the difference today was what I was calling about wasn't how awful these people were and what they were doing to me. It was, I am so revolted by the way I'm reacting to life today, you know. And something you just said, Tyla, like my Al-Anon sponsor said to me, she said something about like oh, judging myself is never a tool I should reach for. You know, and I just, you said something that was like totally along the same lines of like, you know, that's not what we're here for. And like, have I built the capacity and for love and kindness? Mm-hmm. Right? And can I show up for others in that way? And like, for instance, do I seem unable to be of real help to other people? I'm like, no, I'm good. Last weekend, no, I'm good. I can show up for people. Today I was like, oh hell no. I'm like at work, I especially like when I'm in judgment and criticism, that is not me showing up and being helpful to others, right? Like when I'm judging others and then I'm judging myself for judging them because I'm sober, you know? And it's, I just, another thing she said to me today is, can I let the human in me welcome the human that's in front of me? And I want to be able to graciously receive love, you know, is another piece of it. And like the things like I can, the way I can treat you, my fellows, my sponsees, my sponsors, can I do that with people at work, the people I work with? Can I see the same love within them? You know, it's like, I have this thing now where it's like, you know, I mean, I got a card today, my birthday's on Thursday, and I got a card from a sponsee today, which was so sweet, and it was just adorable, and just like the nicest thing ever. My mom sends me some flowers that are obnoxious, and I'm like, oh my God, and all the stuff about my mom, right? And it's like the difference. I mean, it took me a minute before I could go, oh, my mom is really sweet, and that was a really thoughtful thing for her to do, you know? Whereas with my sponsee, right away, I had the love. You know, mm-hmm. Like, can I bridge that gap? So it was funny because I like went to this and I was like, yes, I am prey to misery. Then when I'm like in my shit, you know, and it's funny because I was talking to one of my friends quoted Joe, a little smarty, and saying, fear is a conscious choice I make to rely on myself. Because I was talking about picking up fear and I was talking about picking up anxiety and how when I'm anxious and when I'm in fear, how it feels like that's self-will because I'm not turning 100% to God. And God was on my list, which is a beautiful thing for someone who came in here, mm-hmm. you know, almost 16 years ago going, what's the whole thing with God on the wall?
Like, I'm so.
I don't know about that. You know, I was one of those New Yorkers, right? And mm-hmm. for me to like go, oh, 10 most important relationships. Yeah, God's in there. You know, for sure. And, but then what I realized is similar to what you were saying, Tyla, is like, my trouble with God is having that 100% belief that God will not leave me. You know, I need to believe 100% that God is here always, you know, and there are those moments where I lack. So I think Jan just told me time, so I'll stop talking, but I love how when I'm going through BBA, like, it all is coming together. You know, it's like the Matrix, right? Like right. I'm seeing it all now. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Would John, Jerry, or Don like to share?
You're Hawaiian. Jerry's in the house. Mr. Hawaii.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Thank you. This chapter, it's funny. I remember going through the book for the first time with my sponsor, Frank, and he said, I want you to go home and read this chapter 4 about we agnostics. And I go, I believe in God. I don't need to read that section of the book. And he said, F you, go read the chapter. And it brings me back to now I laugh about it because everything I've found in there, it's just such the layers of the onion. And I love this chapter because you peel back and you get more and more and more so many times going through it. So it just makes me realize how hard-headed I was in the beginning and how I am still because we sit here tonight. And in the beginning of this year, I made it a point for the New Year's Eve resolution, I guess, to bring God into my relationships. I have a tendency to snap on people and, you know, be a jerk, basically, in work and construction or even in life in general, just be a typical smart ass. And so what I did was I made a commitment to bring God into every relationship I have as I walk the earth. And it's been a great year of not snapping on people, the pause, you know, the 3 second, 7 second pause has really been helpful. And I've been treating others with kindness and respect, and it's worked out. It's just been wonderful. But then I'm sitting here listening to you tonight, Tyler, and I carry this business has gone really well for me in the last few years. And I remember giving that up to God, and it's just taken off for me. But I've been carrying this ball of stress in the back of my mind because things have been going so well. And I realized tonight listening to you that I've been trying to manage everything in my business. And I haven't had God walking beside me. And it's just like the light bulb just went bing.
It's kind of, I'm so glad.
Why am I not just bringing him with me? He's the one who got me this far. Have him help me do the business together with God. And my finances, with good business comes finances and really good things, but it's like splattered all over the wall. Why am I not having God help me with that?
That's right.
And so it's just really brought it to light that I've picked and choosed what areas I think he needs to help me in. And my ego and my self-will wants me to still, well, I got this, when I really don't. And life would be so much easier if I could just grab his hand, put my arm around, and say, let's work on this problem today. And then when we get to a being real help to other people, you know, you get a little bit of time in a program and you get sponsees, and it's wonderful. It's a blessing. And you know this, Tyler, everybody's got their problems and they're calling you with their problems.
Oh, yeah.
It goes way beyond alcoholism. It goes into all just life. And I was sitting there thinking, who am I to give advice? I don't know any more than the next guy. So what I'm going to try and do moving forward is to take the pause when I'm sitting on the phone or sitting with a sponsee and channel God's will for that person.
That's right.
And it's bringing me a good feeling inside. It's you know, the hole in my soul that I had as an alcoholic and drug addict. I can feel it. I can feel the goodness that will bring, that I can be of real help to other people. So again, tonight's been an eye-opening experience. Again, I got chills thinking about it because there's just always something to learn. The book keeps revealing more and more to me, and I just love it. So thank you.
Thank you. That was beautiful. And you know, when I have people that are having problems, I try to tell them to take it to God in quiet time for 3 days. And Kimberly's saying, yeah, me, you know, and let me know what they get in 3 days. You know what I mean? I want them to, you know, to have, you know, 5 minutes, just quiet time sitting with it and asking God. And they will begin to hear answers because, like you said so well, I want to build their reliance on God and not on me. That was great, Jerry. Thank you. Who would like to share? Please unmute and shout out.
Hi, I'm Norma, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Norma.
Hi, I'm laying here in amazement. I just woke up. I was tired. I didn't want to do this thing. And here I'm sitting just anchored at the screen and listening to what you have said. The big book just became alive, these bedevilments, man. I never heard anything like this. And I've been, you know, in AA in the program for a while. I would go through the book. I would read over the stuff, you know, making sure that I covered the book, not that I covered what was actually in the book, you know, and man, I'm amazed. This week, you know, I'm here in the Netherlands because my mom passed away, and I'm going through the mourning and the grief, and every time something new comes up, I don't think that there was a better time for me to join this workshop, because it has just been a solution. If I didn't have the workshop, I don't know if I had the strength not to fall back or relapse again. You know, I got so much out of this here these past few weeks, Tyler. It's just amazing. And you know where I started, yeah, from, that there was kind of a should you do this because this is heavy. No, I love this. I'm gonna have to go over it again. This book just came alive, Tyler. Thank you so much.
So glad.
So much for your shares, because it adds on to me. Thank you. Very spiritual.
You know,
I just had a big argument with the feminine.
What'd you say?
Pardon me?
You had an argument with the bedevilments?
No. With a family member that is, I think I can't label them, but I think that is untreated addiction. And I just saw myself in that person, how I would create chaos. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And you know, because I am so in the mourning process, that sometimes I just forget that God is the one that guides me. you know, and then I leave them, just like the gentleman was saying, I leave them instead of taking them with me. So that was an eye opener to take God in every situation, no matter what the situation is. Thank you for letting me share.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you're with us, Norma. Who would like to share?
I'll share. Natasha Alcoholic. And thank you, Tyla. Your share was so amazing. And I just, I don't know. I mean, I definitely didn't have the experience that we have when this is explained to us in Big Book Awakening. Mm-hmm. I came to Big Book Awakening when I was initially 14 years sober, and I was just so uncomfortable, and I was struggling still with an eating disorder, and I just had so many problems in my life that I didn't know how to solve, but I just thought the solution was like if my weight was this, if my husband was someone else, if I had more money here, if I had this job, and I just couldn't get things right. And when I heard the bedevilments explained at the meeting, like broken down on page 52, literally asking myself those questions, and I had never experienced that before. I was so happy to hear about them, even though I was miserable. I was like, oh, thank God, you know, that's what's wrong with me. And it's like, we can't go after the solution until, or I couldn't go after the solution if I didn't know what the problem was. So it's like, I had never been shown to ask myself those questions. When I read the book initially in my sobriety, I just read those as if that was something that happened and how I felt when I was drinking. So how would I know if no one explained it to me? So, I mean, I would read through those questions and be like, yeah, you know, I'm prey to misery and depression when I'm drunk, you know, like, why wouldn't I be happy? Like, I mean, of course. And, you know, I'm trouble with relationships. Well, yeah, of course, if I'm drunk and blacking out, that's going to be troublesome relationships. But these, like, looking at it as a, you know, as a reflection of my spiritual condition and getting that understanding is life changing. And once I understood that, like, I could get to the solution, like, my whole world changes and God changes me from the inside out. And thank God, because I was not doing a good job of changing myself from the outside in. And there was something else on page 44. Oh yeah, the spiritual, like, we have to live a spiritual life or else. And I didn't understand that for the longest time. I was like, okay, a spiritual life. I thought that was just like coming to AA, saying the serenity prayer every so often, trying to be honest, like not stealing as much as I used to, not lying as much as I used to. But it's like, the spiritual life is broken down and explained. And it's like, I get to do prayer and meditation. I get to work with others. I get to show up to meetings, and I get to have this connection with God where I live presently in the world of the spirit. And that's, and to have that experience is it's amazing, you know, coming from a life of darkness, you know, and a life of just despair and not really understanding how to get free. It's just, it's really worth it. And oh, there's just so much. I wanted to share more, but I forgot what it was. So I'm just going to end there. Thanks, Tyla.
Thank you, honey. Who would like to share? Wendy, are you sharing?
Yeah. Oh, hi, Tyla. Hi, everyone. It's Wendy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Wendy.
I didn't want to share because I shared last week, but, you know, Tyla, this was so good and so powerful. Thanks. And I absolutely loved everything tonight that you shared with us. And you know, the thing that I never saw in recovery before I came to the BBA was that the unmanageability in the first step was with my spirit. I just thought that it was my outside, I thought it was the consequences and the outside circumstances and how bad my life looked because of the drinking and using. And that was just a total, I never experienced anything like this before. It just blew my mind. That in itself was such an awakening, okay, a Big Book awakening. And so also I was thinking about how my relationship with God before, I don't really think I had much of a relationship. It's like kind of like how you said, you know, you were God's helper. I think I even took it a step further and God was my helper.
No, God was my helper.
Really? Okay. I thought, okay. Mm-hmm. Because I really feel like my perception of God was kind of like he was Santa Claus or something, you know, mm-hmm. And I would just ask for things and expect him to do them for me. Now that I'm sober, you know, I'm sober. Just, can you do this for me? You know, because before I didn't really have any relationship with God when I was drinking and using. But now I do have a relationship with God, and it's because of this process in the BBA. And it, you know, I'm so glad that I'm doing this again, because it's just kind of reminding me of it, restoring it more, bringing me back up to it, seeing it again. And also, let's see, I just love that God's like a best friend, and he's really loving, you know, like you shared with me before. You know, there's just so much that I've gotten out of doing this in the Big Book Awakening, and, you know, the bedevilments. Well, first of all, I remember Natasha shared somewhere, she said she didn't even read the We Agnostics. And I didn't either. I didn't even know what it was. I had to ask Joe, what is an agnostic? I don't even understand what that means. I just thought it was something similar to an atheist, like, you know. So I'm glad that I got to clear that up and actually read it and care about what it said. But I used to just read the book, and it just kind of like went over my head. I would fall asleep. It didn't really mean anything to me. But doing it by changing statements into questions for me has just completely changed it. Like, I couldn't understand how people could share in meetings and talk about what was in the Big Book, because I just thought, wow, they're really special, and I don't know how they do it, but, you know, obviously they had some kind of an experience that revolutionized their life, and now I get to say that I have experienced that too. And another thing is when we were writing about our family members or just people that were like the most important relationships, you know, I heard someone else share that they didn't want to put their family members, and I didn't either. I haven't talked to my brother for over 2 years, and I hardly ever talk to my mother, and I'm pretty estranged from, I mean, I see my dad once in a while. And it's like, I wasn't going to put them, but I told Tyla.
I told you to put down your estranged family members.
Yeah, because I was thinking like, well, no, I'm not going to put people I don't really have a relationship with. She said important relationships, but it's like they are important, even though they're very kind of sad ones, right? Mm-hmm. But it's important to see it, because what do I want to do? I want to continue to grow. I want to see what God can do in my life. That's in these areas that seem hopeless or lost, right? So anyhow, I don't want to take up any more time, but thank you.
Thank you. That's all the time that we have. We'll stay on for a few minutes after if anyone really wants to share, and we will stay on. But I want to give you the instructions for homework. But before I do, we are all going to, I want you all to unmute. And Helen is going to lead us in a first step prayer, and we are going to thank you, Helen, so much for doing this. And we're all going to say it after her. Okay, so please unmute. Are you there, Helen, honey?
Here, Tyla. No, thank you for asking me to do this.
Thank you.
Okay, we ready?
Yes, we are.
God, I concede to you that I am an alcoholic.
I admit to you,
I am an alcoholic.
I am powerless over alcohol physically, and it is only the power of your grace that gave me this sobriety date.
I don't know if I can say that all at once. Yes. Can you break it in half? Okay.
I am powerless over alcohol physically.
I am powerless over alcohol physically.
And it is only the power of your grace.
And it is only the power of your grace.
That gives me this sobriety date. I am powerless over alcohol emotionally.
I am powerless over alcohol emotionally.
I can't produce a sense of ease and comfort on my own.
I can't produce a sense of ease and comfort on my own.
Powerful enough to keep me.
Powerful enough to keep me.
From taking the first drink.
From taking the first drink.
And the only way I am still sober.
And the only way I'm still sober is that I am still sober.
No matter what I have felt,
no matter what I have felt,
is by your grace that grants me this sobriety date.
By your grace that grants me this sobriety date.
I am powerless over alcohol mentally.
I am powerless over alcohol mentally.
I am without mental defense against taking the first drink.
I am without mental defense against taking the first drink or drug.
And the only way I am still sober.
And the only way I am still sober.
No matter what I have thought.
No matter what I have thought.
Is by your grace that grants me this sobriety date.
By your grace, this sobriety date.
I am powerless over alcohol spiritually.
I am powerless over alcohol and drugs spiritually.
I fail at producing a spiritual basis of life.
I fail at producing a spiritual basis of life.
And the only way I am sober is by your grace.
And the only way I am sober is by your grace that grants me this sobriety date.
No matter what my current bedevilments are.
No matter what my current bedevilments are.
Manifestations of a spiritual malady.
Manifestations of a spiritual malady.
The only way I still have a sobriety date is by your grace.
The only way I have a sobriety date is by your grace.
I trust by your grace. There is no human power. Mine or anybody else's can ever take that away. I trust by your grace. Which is all powerful. More powerful than alcohol or drugs. Alcoholism, an addiction. And the spiritual malady. I'll be free from all of it. From this day forward. Amen.
Praise God.
Thank you, Calvin.
Hey, real quick, we got a copy of that?
I can send you guys a picture of it. I don't know how to send a copy. Is it a good one? It wasn't by me. It was by a friend of mine. But I can send it to you. Anyone that wants it. Let me know. Text it to me.
If she could text it to me, I'll print it out and send it to you, Tyler.
Don't send it to me. The people want me to text it to them.
Why don't you have
okay, I can do that.
No, my no, I have right a copy of it, Rick.
Okay.
Why don't you text it to somebody and just type it
I sent it. I sent it to Helen.
Excellent.
Okay.
I printed mine out.
Okay, wait, I want to give you guys a homework assignment.
Okay. Ooh, that's so powerful.
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Amen.
Amen. Okay, woo! You guys, the homework feel it assignment in the house tonight. The first half of We Agnostics. I want you to open your big books to page 51. Open your big books to page 51. And under the first paragraph where it says the consciousness of the presence of God is the most important fact of our lives, I want you to put a line and put there stop. That's where you stop for the first half of We Agnostics.
One more time, Tyler.
On the top of page 51, honey, where it's the first paragraph where it says the consciousness of the presence of God is the most important fact of our lives. I want you to put a line under that and say, stop.
Got it.
That's where the first half of we agnostics, that's where we break up the chapter. It's going to ask you on the bottom of page 45 for honest doubt, for prejudice, for things from you've heard about religious and things like that, religion, whatever it is. I want you to look at it from where you are now, not from what before you got sober, where you are today. What is your honest doubt? What is your prejudice? What it, we heard from religious people, all that it says on the bottom of page 45. Okay.
And do you want us to write something about that or?
Yes, yeah, you're gonna see it in your questionnaire, but I want you to write your honest doubt. I want you to write your prejudice. I want you to write what you've heard. But as you are now, right before you got sober, we're now going to be dealing with everything with how you are presently.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Vanessa?
Yeah.
You guys? Okay. Any other questions?
No, I think you should charge for this, man. Wow. I'm having such an explosion in my head.
Awesome, right. Yeah, that was awesome. I get more out of it than anyone. I'm so